Hey, this is Ryan Rogers, and I'm the pastor at the Palmer Seventh-day Adventist Church. I hope that this message gives you a glimpse of how beautiful our God is.
Well, this is our last week on I Was Afraid of That, which means we have an afternoon session, and we're going to enjoy a discussion one more time. And I hope there's been something in this, as we've gone through several Old Testament stories, let's just let you invite God into your emotions of fear and let him help you through those things. We have looked at the paradox of fear, that we can put our fear of God, who's awesome, and it conquers our fear of everything else. We've looked at the fear of loss, the fear of the future, fear of religious oppression. And today, we're going to round it all out with the fear of not being enough. Maybe you can relate. I imagine there's something in your life that you're not enough for. It is kind of scary to know you're not enough. So let's begin this message with prayer. Father in heaven, I thank you for every single person here that you brought us here. You've given us life and health today. I pray as we're gathered that you do something that doesn't happen when we're alone. Something special where we can be blessed by the presence of one another and by your presence. As we open your word and read a story, you speak directly to our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. In the summer of 2018, I had the opportunity to go to Jordan and Israel for a Holy Land tour. It was just amazing. I loved every minute of it. It was like one amazing moment after another amazing moment. Just wow, every place I went. Some of those amazing moments were standing on Mount Nebo, like the place where Moses went, where he died, and he overlooked the Promised Land. We got to stand on Mount Nebo and look across into the Promised Land. And when we went to the Jordan River, we participated in a pilgrim's baptism, the same body of water where Jesus was baptized. We're going into Jerusalem and walking on the Temple Mount, this very sacred, every square inch has been fought over and worshipped on, and we get to walk this place. Or swimming in the Sea of Galilee, where we hear these miracles. We also went out in the morning and watched the sunrise from the Mount of Olives, and then we prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. And I want to take you to one of those places, one of the places I wasn't expecting to be a special spot. It was on the day we traveled from Galilee to Jerusalem. And it's not a long trip from Galilee to Jerusalem, but we made a whole day of it and stopped at many sites. And one of the places I want to take you to is the Spring of Harod. I did not recognize that as a biblical reference until our guide told us what it was, but just a few pictures from the Spring of Harod. This is very lush and green, so you're coming out of a pretty dry place in Galilee, and you're going through some deserty areas, but then you come to this valley of Jezreel, and there are crops. When you get up on a high place, you look down, and there's just colors everywhere, different types of crops, and there's some water in this area, and the spring comes right out of this mountain. This is the foothills of Mount Gilboa, and a very green area. So we pull in here, it looks like a park, and there's water coming from a cave, from a spring. This is the Spring of Harod. And our tour guide helped us understand as we were wading in the water, and it was hot, you know? You have to use your imagination, because I know what it's like out there. But it was hot, and it just felt good to be cooled down. So we, you know, roll up our pants or take our shoes off and get in the water. And he reminds us that the Spring of Harod appears in the book of Judges, chapter 7, when the Israelites, well, the people following Gideon, not all the Israelites, encamped at the Spring of Harod, just short of the encampment of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east, and they camped there, and God sent some home, and then some of them lapped like water, and some of them knelt, and God divided the army down till it was 300. This was the spring that they drank from, that God used to divide that army and reduce them to 300. So I sat there next to that spring, put my feet in the water, and I contemplated diving in there and lapping like a dog. Thought, you know, that would be a good story. I did the same thing the 300 did, and then I thought, I still have 5 days in Israel, and I just don't want to get sick. But if I went again, I think I'd do it. So I sat there and reflected on what happened in that place. What a special spot. I thought about what it'd be like to be one of those 300 men. They're going up against an army of at least 135,000. And they arrive at that encampment with 32,000. At that point, you're about a 4-to-1 ratio, and you're thinking, we're going to have to really bring it for battle. We're outnumbered, but we might be able to do this. And God reduces them down. He sends the fearful home, and 22,000 go. Then he divides them, and if you're Gideon, and he tells you, separate those who lap from those who kneel, and you see 9,700 who knelt and 300 who lapped, you're thinking, God, send home the lappers. I'll take the 9,700, and he reduces them down to 300, and I'm imagining I'm one of those 300 men. And Gideon tells me that God tells him that he's going to save Israel with the 300 men. This is a place of fear. It's a place where a whole bunch of people followed their fear home. They said, we're too afraid. This is a place of decision. Am I going to go into battle, or am I going to go home? It is a place of not being enough. So I invite you mentally, let's bring ourselves to that place. Like, put your feet in the water and let it be a place of decision. We're finishing this series. We're kind of concluding our time of fear. Let this be a moment where you are brought to decision with God, a place of fear. How are you going to handle your not being enough? And here's the point I want to make, is that when we don't need to be enough, when we are surrendered to the God who is enough. So if you're trying to be enough, what I'm going to tell you today is stop trying to be enough. That is the opposite of a motivational speech, but it is the Christian message. We don't need to be enough. We have a God who says, I will put my spirit in you and I am enough. It is a message of surrender, not a message of being strong and big. If I could accomplish one thing today by the story of Gideon, it would be that you would walk out of here and you could say to yourself with a smile on your face, I am not enough. Rather than to say to yourself in shame and anxiety, man, I am not enough. But that you would recognize the fact that you're not enough, and it would be something of joy knowing that your God is enough even in all your inadequacy. If you notice the main point, you'll notice that I've preached the same message 5 weeks in a row with different stories. Same message. I had a main point for the first message that said, an appropriate fear of God conquers our fear of everything else. In other words, I'm saying there's real fear and God is enough, pointing us to God. And then we talked about the future, and I said, there is so much good in the future you're afraid of. So I recognize there's scary stuff, but God is good. There's so much good he has. And we talked about loss. And we said, with God, you can lose everything else and still be a winner. So yeah, there's scary things to lose, but God's enough. You can still be a winner. And we talked about religious persecution, and we said that peace is not the absence of trouble, but the presence of Jesus. Yeah, there's scary things. There's religious persecution, but here's Jesus. And once again, there's scary stuff that we're not enough for. There's scary stuff that's too much, but you don't have to be enough. I don't have to be enough. I need to be surrendered to the God who is enough. We're going to go through the story of Gideon. So it's Judges chapter 6 and chapter 7. There's more to the story, but that's where we're going to be, Judges chapter 6 and chapter 7. And as we go through the story, I'm going to go a bit fast because that's quite a bit of text. And we're just going to notice the not enough and the too much. Very relatable things. There is some distinct perspectives of not enough in the story of Judges, and there's some very descriptive pictures of too much in the book of Judges. And through it all, we're going to see a God that over and over again is more than enough. We know what not enough feels like. We know what it feels like to not at the end of the month. what it feels like to not have enough patience with the kids, to not have enough courage to follow through with the things we know are right, to not have enough conviction or faith or compassion or enough time. Every one of us knows the feeling of not enough, and we know the feeling of too much. There's just too much to be done. There's just too much dysfunction to reconcile this relationship. There is too much opposition, too much against me. We know those feelings, and they can be entirely overwhelming. Today is good news. God is letting us off the hook of being enough. We can look at the too much, we can know we're not enough, and we can say, that's all right. I have a God who is. I'm going to trust him. So when you open up to the story of Gideon in Judges chapter 6, we see the too much right away. It was read for us in the scripture reading, the first six verses. I'm going to go through them, and what I want to notice is how descriptive the too much of the situation is. Just overwhelming. It says, Judges chapter 6, verse 1, "The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hand of Midian 7 years. Notice the root cause of their problem was not Midian. It was doing evil in the sight of the Lord. Usually, the things that are too much for us aren't actually the root of the problem. It's probably something between us and God at the root of the problem. So they did evil, and this was a pattern. You know the book of Judges. It's a depressing book, and it just gets worse and worse. But the pattern is that they turn away from God, God raises up a deliverer, and they turn back to God because things got really bad, and they cry out to him, and they follow a judge or a deliverer, and then they turn away from God. And they'd gone through this cycle. If you look back to the final verse in chapter 5, they had peace for 40 years. The land had rest. So the people in the time, I don't know how old Gideon was, but probably most of his life is peaceful. So these past 7 years were the worst years of his life. God gave them over to the hand of Midian 7 years. Verse 2, "And the hand of Midian overpowered Israel." So that's one of those words of the too much, overpowered. So if there's something in your life that you are powerless against, it's overwhelming, this is the situation Gideon was in. Overpowered Israel. "And because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves the dens that are in the mountainside and the caves and the strongholds." Actually, if I go back a few pictures, that mountain is covered in caves. I don't know if you can see them in my pictures here. No, you can't. Anyhow, there's a cave that the water's coming out of, but there's caves all over that mountain. I don't know that they're the mountains they hid in, but the point is, these people are homeless. They're hiding in the rocks in the mountains. So another situation that's too much is they've been taken away from their settled, comfortable home and environment or their tent or whatever they're living in, and now they're on the run. This is too much. And verse 3, "Whenever the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them." So we have Midianites, Amalekites, and people of the east. And real quickly on those, they were not people in the land of Canaan, the Midianites and Amalekites. There were people they didn't drive out that gave them headaches, but these people weren't those people. They came from the south and the east, and Midian was a son of Abraham. So these are family members. And Amalek was a son of Esau. These are people that are all children of Abraham, and they're coming from outside of Canaan, and they would just go through on a tour to see how many cattle and donkeys and all that they could get, and they'd go back, and they'd be richer. So here are the people coming. I wonder if our families just got along, how much peace that'd bring in the future. They wouldn't have this problem if all the sons of Abraham liked each other and supported one another, but here they have distant relatives coming and taking their food. This would be a too much situation. If I had the ability to plant crops, raise food, and then right about the time I wanted to harvest and eat it, someone else came and took it all. Maybe you felt that way before. Maybe you've worked very hard on things, and then somebody in your life or some situation in your life takes all the fruit of your labor about the time you were about to benefit from all that labor. They plant crops, and they take them. Verse 4 describes, they would encamp against them and devour the produce of the land as far as Gaza. So if you don't have a map in your mind, that means a long ways from north to south, all the produce would be taken. So they're starving. They're wanting food. They're hiding food because the Midianites and Amalekites and people of the east keep taking it. Verse 5, and they took their sheep and donkeys, it says. In verse 5, they would come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come like locusts in number, but they and their camels could not be counted. Because if they're patient enough, they could. But the description here is, there were so many that you'd look out and it just looked like it never ended. There's just more and more of these people. This is a too much situation. The land as they came in, and Israel was brought very low because of Midian. So if there's a situation in your life that feels too much, just equate it to this. All your crops are destroyed. 7 years of people coming and devouring your land. They can't be counted. It's too numerous. And now you look and your life is brought very low. And they're brought low to the place that they cried out to God. Maybe that was exactly the place they were supposed to be. After 7 years, God was trying to bring them to a place that they'd cry out to him. So this is a situation of too much. Now, in your imagination, we're going to go back to our pool. I want you to put your feet in the water, imagine you're there, and just have a moment with God in that pool. This is a place of decision. And ask yourself, when you're looking at that thing that's too much, maybe I didn't describe it, but you can relate in your life, that thing that's too much, are you willing to trust God as you move into something that you know is way too big for you? Like you just know it's way beyond your ability. It's overpowering. It's bigger than you will ever have the strength to contend with. Are you willing to trust God to continue with him into something that is too much? Then we see a reminder that God's enough. They cry out to him. He sends a prophet. Verse 7 through 10 describes this. The prophet comes, and the prophet reminds them of God being enough. He says, you came out of Egypt, and God was enough for you in the Exodus. God did all these things. God is enough. And then he reminds them at the very end of verse 10, you don't need to fear these people. You have a great God, but you have not obeyed his voice. God is enough. And then we see Gideon as not enough. I'm in verse 11. It says, not enough. Gideon is approached by an angel, and the angel finds him in a wine press threshing wheat. Probably thought about this before, but already this is a identifier that he's not enough. There was a place to thresh wheat, and that was a threshing floor. And it'd be in a high place, probably a top of a hill, where the prevailing winds could come in and it could blow the chaff away and the heavier grain could fall to the threshing floor, and you'd separate it and you'd have it. But if he did that, the Midianites and Amalekites and people of the east would come and take it. So he's trying to separate the chaff and the grain in a wine press. And the wine press is the opposite. It's a low place because that's where you press grapes. And so the gravity takes the juice down and funnels it into one place so you can collect all the grape juice. But he's in a hole trying to separate the wheat and the chaff. There's no wind there. He's probably making very little progress. So when the angel comes, he finds him. Literally, it says he's there because he's hiding from the Midianites. He finds him in hiding, and the angel addresses him, ironically, as man of valor, a mighty man of valor. Verse 12 says, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. What do you think? You think the angel of the Lord was being sarcastic? Think the angel of the Lord was speaking the truth of who Gideon was if he would let God fill him with his spirit. That was the truth of who Gideon would be prophetically speaking to a man who is weak and not enough. This is the truth of who you will be in the power of God, a mighty man of valor. Well, Gideon objects. Verse 13, Gideon responds and he says, "Please, my Lord, if the Lord is with me, if he's with us, then why has all this happened to us?" And then he goes on to say that he feels forsaken by God. Well, the angel of the Lord doesn't argue and say, "Hey, look, all these signs and evidences that you haven't been forsaken." Instead, the angel of the Lord responds and says, verse 14, "Go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do I not send you? Go in this might of yours." What was the might of Gideon? He was not enough. He's feeling very low. He's not feeling like a man of valor. The might of Gideon is that the Lord was with him. That was what made him a man of valor. The angel says, "Go in this might you have and save Israel." This might is, I'm going with you. I am the might that you have. And in this might, in God, you will save Israel. Well, Gideon responds by saying, "I'm not enough." Verse 15, he says, "Please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." And the Lord said to him, "But I will be with you." He says, "I am not enough." And God says, "That's okay. I know you're not enough. In fact, that's why I came to you, Gideon, because you're not enough. It's okay. I will be with you, and I am enough." Have you ever let your heritage and your family and your past be an excuse to not follow God? Not me. My family is the weakest. I come from a long line of not enough. But Gideon is in that place. If you've been in that place and you're feeling inadequate, Gideon was there. He was fearful. He was hiding. He is arguing with the angel of the Lord saying, "I think you got the wrong man. If you're going to save Israel by someone's hands, pick someone who's enough." And he chooses him. So go back to the pool. Put your feet in the water. This is a moment of decision between you and God. Are you willing to follow God knowing that you're not going to be enough? He's not even going to make you enough. He's not going to give you independent strength apart from him. He's going to be your strength. It's going to be a thing of 100% dependence on him. Are you willing to follow God when you know in yourself, of yourself, you're not enough? Story continues, and we've seen too much, we've seen not enough, and now as it continues, we see some more of the too much. God is good to Gideon, and he gives a sign. Gideon wants to know that God is enough, and this is not the sign of the fleece, this is the sign of the food. So in verse 17, it continues with the sign of the food. "If I found favor in your eyes, then show me a sign." And he goes and he makes the angel of the Lord wait, and he prepares some food. He comes back with the food, and he's looking to see that this is really, like, this is God. I can trust this power here. And he puts the food on the rock. The angel says, "Put the food on the rock." And then he stretches out a stick. And so far, nothing abnormal has happened. He's wanting to know that this is a power beyond natural power. And then the angel of the Lord touches the food with a stick, and it's consumed by fire. That's not normal. That's not what happens when I touch food with a stick. It consumes it by fire. I'm thinking, if you have a birthday party and you have a pinata, you don't want the angel of the Lord there. He's going to set your Tootsie Rolls on fire. The stick touches the food, and it bursts into flame. And the point is that Gideon saw this, and he knew something special. He knew this was God. And so he's terrified and he worships and he thinks he's going to die. In verse 23, God, the angel of the Lord says something. I think he's going to say it right to us. If you're engaging with this text and you want to let God be enough, this is what he says to you. Verse 23, "But the Lord said to him, 'Peace be to you. Do not fear. You shall not die.'" Can we try a repeat after me? So I'm going to say something, you're going to say something, just follow my finger, I'll point to me, and then I'll point to you. So, peace be to you. Do not fear. You shall not die. And look, isn't that a good message? Whatever you feel not enough for, God says, peace be to you. Do not fear. You shall not die. This thing is probably not going to kill you. This thing you're afraid of right now. And then it continues, verse 24, and we see the angel Gideon makes an altar, and he calls the altar, the Lord is peace. We need to make some altars in our life. We need to make some points of memorial in our life that say God is a God of peace. Now, the situation is not peaceful, but the God who's with me is a God of peace. I invite you, before we continue with the story, go back to the pool. Just imagine yourself there. Put your feet in the water. Let God speak to you, and let God be your God of peace. With all the too much, with all the not enough, let God make a little altar with you, and you'll just say, God, you are going to be my peace in this situation that is too much. The peace was not a permanent place of residence, though. Right away, God took Gideon from the peace and pushed him into a too much situation, a scary situation. The first business God had to do through Gideon was to tear down idols. And that was scary because they were idols of people who set them up and wanted them there, and they were the people in his own family. He sent him to his own backyard to his father's idols. That was scary stuff. Well, Gideon did it, but he didn't do it without fear. He gathered 10 men around him. It's good to have some friends to do some scary stuff. When we're intimidated, gather some people around you. And he goes at night, and he takes down the idols. And I understand that Gideon's name literally means hacker or person who cuts down. So he's cutting down these idols. He goes at night, and he did it. He obeyed God. God called him to a situation that was very scary, and he went out and he did it. But it just got scarier after that. Because after he did it, the people of the place woke up. These are his own people. They woke up. They saw the idols down. They did a little investigation. They found out that Gideon did this. And they say, he's got to die. And that's a scary situation to be in. These people want you to die for what you've done. And these are not the Midianites. These are the Israelites. So fortunately, Gideon's dad was loving and wise and quick to think. And he says, if Baal wants to contend for himself, let him do it. Why do we need to fight for Baal? Baal can strike down Gideon if he wants to. And the people were satisfied with that. But then they changed Gideon's name. First of all, I want you to notice that Gideon had a too much enemy, an enemy that was too much. And that was the Midianites, the Amalekites, the people of the East. Then, after he obeys the voice of God and does what God calls him to do, he has an additional enemy, his own people. And then they change his name to Jerubbaal, which means let Baal contend with him. Now, his name literally means the gods are against me. He has the Midianites, the Amalekites, the people of the East. He has his own people, and now he has spiritual forces. I imagine Satan took notice that those idols that he put there to distract God's people got cut down by that guy. I imagine the devil doesn't like Gideon. And so now he literally has the gods against them. That's everybody, except for his dad and maybe those 10 men. So go back to the water. Put your feet in the pool. Are you willing to keep following God into the future, into what he's called you to do, when literally everybody is against you? Maybe that's not true in your situation right now, but it very well could be that everyone but God is going to be against you. This is the reality of not enough and too much. That's where Gideon was. Well, God called him to more things. He needed some reassurance again. He did the double fleece test. So you know the story, the fleece in the ground, and once he wants it dry, once he wants it wet. God did everything the way he asked him to do it. The point is not that God obeys our little tricks. The point is not that we can wonder about something and then say, hey, if this car is green and the next car is red, then I know you're true. You know, that's not the point. God had already called him to go fight. He had already called him to do these things. It was just a confirmation that this really was God. Once again, Gideon saw through the fleece test, this God who's calling me into a situation that's too much, this God is enough. And from that point, Gideon, the man who was not enough, had a very special thing happen to him. Notice verse 34. Chapter 6, verse 34. He's not enough. Situation's too much. Verse 34 says, but the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon. He sounded the trumpet. The Abiezerites were called out to follow him. That's his own clan. And the messengers were sent out through all Manasseh, and they too were called out to follow him. And then he gets a couple other tribes to join him. So now he has a situation that's too much, he's not enough, but the Spirit of the Lord clothed him. So as you sit by that pool and you put your feet in the water, which would you rather be? Would you rather be hidden in the wine press or exposed and clothed in the Spirit of God? That's a beautiful image, that I could go into the too much and be okay because I am clothed by the Spirit of God. We don't need to be enough when we're surrendered to a God who is enough. Then it takes us right into the calling. Right after that moment, he says, go. You got all these people. I want you to go and fight. But first, we come to chapter 7, and God has a little problem with the army. And it's ironic. Chapter 7, verse 2. Verse 1 says they're at the spring of Harod. So now we come to the spring of Harod. Chapter 7, verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, the people with you are too many. You might expect that to read a little different. Maybe you'd expect it to say the people against you are too many, or the people with you are too few. But God actually says the people with you are too many. He says, they're too many for me to give the Midianites into your hands. Now, the people with Gideon are too few for Gideon to give the Midianites into his hands, but they're too many for God to give the Midianites into his hands. You follow what's happening? Gideon is feeling like, I'm too few, and God says, actually, you're still too many. And he tells him why as you continue in verse 2. He says, lest Israel boast over me, saying, my own hand has saved me. This is a powerful point for us to take to heart. When you're feeling not enough, God is looking at you and saying, you're still too much. There's actually too much self there still. The thing that's holding you back and keeping you in freedom is probably not that you're not enough. It's probably that there's too much of self still in you. It's probably that you're too much, because God is not calling us to be enough. He's calling us to be surrendered. And when I am maybe enough, then I cling on to the little bits of self-sufficiency and they keep me from fully depending on God. So God looks at the people that, humanly speaking, it's not enough. But what God has in mind is actually too much. When we come to God, we're feeling inadequate, and he's feeling like, I still need to reduce you before I can use you. Now, he doesn't want us to be reduced as in we have this terrible low self-esteem and we just hang our head. He wants us to know that it was not our power that accomplished that. They come to the camp with 32,000, so this is a ratio of 1-4. That would have taken skill, strategy, a little luck, and some really good fighting. And they would have gone home and said, we overcame the 1-4 odds here. But after he reduces them down, it's a ratio of 1 Israelite to 450 Midianites. And you know what that takes? That takes a miracle. God was bringing them to the place where they knew they couldn't even try to be enough anymore. God reduces them. First, he sends the fearful home, and he does it in a loving way. He's not shaming them for being fearful. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 20, there's a precedence for this, because they would say that he told them, not everyone should go into war. If you're newly married or you just bought a house, don't go into war. And if you're fearful, don't go to war, because fear spreads through the army. So he had a precedence for sending home the fearful. God sends them home. 2/3 go home. Then he does it again. Once again, he says, there are still too many people. And he sends home, and they end up with the 300. God is bringing them to a place where they either go home or they say, this has to be God. So go back to the spring. Put your feet in the water. Whatever it is that's too much for you, are you willing to be reduced, to let self be reduced to the point where you know it's either defeat or a miracle of God? This has to be God. I have to cling to him because I am not going to have the strength to do it. Are you willing to admit that maybe your strength is getting in the way of God working through you? Maybe your ability, maybe the things you are proud of are actually hindering the hand of God to move in a mighty way in the thing that's too much for you. Well, once again, God is enough. He calls them to battle and he says, Gideon, it's time to go. But, I love how God does this. God knows Gideon's heart. He says, but if you're still afraid to go down and listen to what they're saying. So instead of taking 300, he takes one servant. So here's Gideon. There's two men going down and just listening, and God times it perfectly that he hears the dream, and the dream has this big barley loaf that tumbles into camp, and they interpret the dream and say, this could be nothing but Gideon. This is Gideon. So God gives him the perfect message. Once again, just to remind him, God is enough. God is a God who can put thoughts into the minds of the enemy. God is enough. God is doing supernatural things here. He gave this dream. You don't have to be strong. So he goes back, and I imagine he ran up the hill. It was a hill. They were looking down on the valley of the Midianites. I imagine he ran up the hill and said, hey guys, I know for sure God is enough. Don't worry about our size. We don't need to be enough. We're surrendered to the God who is. Let's go do this. In fact, it says, it doesn't say they didn't have swords, but it says one hand had a torch and one hand had a trumpet, and they only had two hands. And so maybe the sword was down here. They go down into the camp of the enemy, and they don't even have a sword in their hand. They're completely depending on the God who is enough. And that God who is enough strikes down the enemy with the enemy's own sword. That was the too much enemy, and God is big enough that we don't even have to go in there and fight that battle. We just follow him and do what he has asked to do, and they strike each other down and they run away. Then there's some people in Israel who hear about it and they say, why didn't you call us out into battle? Hey, we wanted to get in on this. And Gideon says, this was God. God did this. Don't be mad at me for letting you out. Don't give me the credit. This was God doing this. So take yourself back to that spring. One last time, to that spring. We really have a couple options with our fear. One is we can go home, and God gives that option. We can go home and stop pressing into the things he's called us to do. And I don't think he's mad at us for that. But one thing is sure, the 22,000 who went home afraid missed out on the miracle. Stopped moving forward in the supernatural strength of God. And I don't want to miss out on the miracles in the Palmer Seventh-day Adventist Church and in my family. So you have the option of going home when things get scary. And I think you also have the option of staying and trying to pretend that you're enough. Like, I'm going to be one of those 300, and I'm just going to be tough. And if we do that long enough, we'll be very humbled because we realize we aren't enough. And the final option, that I would love to be one who takes this option, is one who stays and says, I'm going to stop trying to be enough. I'm going to surrender everything to the God who is enough, and he gets all the glory, and it's scary because I know this is too much for me, but I'm going to trust him in these scary things, this too much. All the things we've talked about over the past 5 weeks, whatever God's brought to your heart that you want freedom from, that he's calling you to face your fear in, bring it to this pool. This is how we're going to end. We're going to listen to some beautiful music, so I invite you up for the music. We're going to listen to a song, just a reflective song. Sit there in the presence of God and let him call you to his sufficiency. Let him whisper to you, just say, hey, stop trying to be enough and let me be more than enough for you.
Thanks for listening to this message from the Palmer Seventh-day Adventist Church. Find us online at palmerak.adventistchurch.org and at pastorryanrogers.com.